Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. Welcome back to the Frying Pan Podcast, episode 7.2, our eagerly awaited take on Indonesian food. For those that tuned in 2 weeks ago, we discussed Spanish food and my particular nuances towards the cuisine of my chosen country. First of all, on behalf of the Frying Pan Podcast, and especially of me, Louis Rive, I'm very, very sorry for my absence for the last 2 weeks. I've been getting loads of feedback, wondering where we were in the world, where I was, where Rowan was, and now the hole in your life that was previously filled by the Frying Pan Podcast will be filled again. So my profound apologies for being away. I've been in Europe. We will touch on that later. And I haven't been able to fulfill my podcasting obligations. And for this, I'm truly sorry. Anyway, onwards and upwards. I'm joined here, as always, by good friend and fellow writer, Rowan Kane. Rowan, how are you doing today?
I'm hanging in there, Louis. We've had a rough couple weeks here in Semawang. Well, rough, I would say, past week or so. To begin with, we didn't have water, didn't have running water for a couple days last week because our pump wasn't working or something along those lines. Got that fixed, got that sorted. Went away to Malang, went to Java to see Bali United play. Spent 25 hours on a bus. We'll get to that later. Bali United lost. Returned, only to find out that the dog that I was taking care of had unfortunately passed away. So it's been one kind of kick in the nuts after the other here. But we're hanging in there, and we're not losing sight of our good fortune.
Okay, good. And my condolences about the dog.
Thank you.
That's never good.
Yeah, he will be missed. He will be missed. But if we talk about it too much, I'll start to cry. So we're gonna move swiftly past it on to happier topics.
Onwards and upwards,
as you say. So what are we talking about today, Lou?
Well, as I say, for the listeners that tuned in 2 weeks ago, we got my take on Spanish food. And as an expat, food in the various countries that we've chosen to live in is actually very different and, radically different to the food of our own nation. And so, this is part 7.2 of the Frying Pan Podcast, which we will focus on Indonesian food.
That is,
I believe, Rowan. Not to be, I mean, I'm sort of a vaguely well...
well-eaten?
What was it? Well-eaten traveller. But I have to say, Indonesian food is a complete and utter mystery to me. Am I right in thinking that satay is Indonesian food, the peanut sauce thing?
You are correct. There is a good amount of peanuts, good amount of satay. There's a food carts are a big thing in Indonesian cuisine, and I'm sure I'll touch on that a little bit later. You basically go around, or there's food carts that go around, and they have these long, thin kind of grills, and they have several sticks of satay that they're just kind of flipping over. Mainly peanut sauce, and they're also served with really like mushy rice that's been baked in banana leaves. It's tasty. I'm not a huge fan of the satay. I don't know. It's too kind of heavy. The one thing I think that defines Indonesian food, is rice. And I've had more rice over the past 8 months than I've ever thought I would have and ever want to have again. It's rice for breakfast, lunch, and dinner here. Which is,
wow.
Can be tiring. Yeah. Can be tiring. Yeah.
Yeah, so you're sort of one, your one starch is coming from the old rice these days.
Indeed.
You are in a vaguely tourist area. Is there the option of chips anywhere, or for the transatlantic listener, fries?
Actually, you know what? The Indonesians don't do a bad set of chips. We are in a highly touristy area. And I say that I've been eating a lot of Indonesian food, and I have been eating a lot of Indonesian food because it's the cheapest thing around, and on a writer's budget, it's what you can afford. So if I was in a more lucrative profession, I could go to some Western style restaurants and have pretty decent Western style food. But we're not talking about Western style food today. We're talking about Indonesian food, and since that's what I've mainly been eating, it's like I said, a lot of rice and very spicy as well. I think is the other defining characteristic would be its spice. Yeah.
Interesting. I mean, that's one of the things that surprised me about coming here, actually, that there was almost no spice in anything. They just don't do it at all. But Indonesians, I mean, I hate to use the pun, they pepper it with spice, but it seemed vaguely appropriate.
Yeah.
Very spicy food, yeah?
Very spicy food. Very spicy food. And most of that spice comes from a thing called sambal, which is translated as condiment or kind of sauce, but more condiment. And there's hundreds, if not thousands, of types of sambal. I actually wrote a little piece on sambal, so we'll put that in the show notes. It's very spicy. It's all spicy. Chopped up peppers, sometimes some garlic, oil. Maybe some onions, tomatoes. It varies from place to place, and depending on the dish that's being served. But it's all really spicy and will destroy your stomach if you're not too careful.
That's actually what I wanted to come on to, because as I say, Indonesia for many of our listeners maybe as well will be a bit of an unknown quantity, so to speak. Now I know a lot of people that have been out east and to the sort of India subcontinent regions, which you're not altogether too far away from at the moment.
True.
And the sort of first month of residence in these countries, India, Burma, Thailand, has been recounted to me as this never-ending kind of inability to hold any food in you at all, and having terrible stomach problems and general never-ending kind of diarrhea. Let's just say it. Let's just put it out there.
Yeah.
The kind of Delhi belly of sorts. And Indonesia, as an unknown quantity, does that fall into one of those countries, or is it something a bit different?
Yes. No, it absolutely does. Much as there's Delhi belly, there is also Bali belly. Which is the Indonesian articulation of that. Fortunately I avoided that for the most part. You can kind of take it easy and not dive too into the spices or into the more questionable food purveyors. It does happen. It can happen. The one that gets me, and it's unfortunate because I love the stuff, is a dish called kangkun, which is basically sautéed water spinach with some garlic and a tomato, sautéed tomato, and they cook it all up, and it's kind of this kind of nice dark dark sauce, like water that goes with it. And it's delicious, but if you eat too much of that, it's a nightmare the next morning. And there are other dishes as well that get you that make the Bali belly. But
Okay, but overall, you didn't have it too bad.
No, I could handle it. I can handle spicy food, so it's not too bad, yeah.
Okay. I guess the whole Indian experience is sort of defined by not only the spice, but also the personal hygiene standards of certain street vendors, which can be an issue. Yeah. And I mean, I've worked like an extensive line of work from literally the bowels of catering to the high end. Mm-hmm. And hygiene is actually quite low in... you know, at the real pinnacle of food preparation in the UK.
Yeah.
And coming to Spain was actually a bit of a shock, watching kind of butchers take meat that they've dropped, mince, they've dropped on the floor, and just kind of package it up as if it wasn't an issue at all. The floor that is quite, like, has a lot of, we have a big roach and rat problem, obviously, because it's very hot. However, I imagine sort of the further east you go, this might be exacerbated a little bit.
Mm.
For the sensible, well, the question I'm trying to get at in a sort of long, rambling way is, for the sort of sensitive-minded Westerner, is sort of food preparation a bit of a different experience?
Yes, yes. Mm. Especially the kind of washing of dishes. And basically, if you get something wet here, it's clean. Once there's any kind of dampness to it, it's clean, and if you just brush it off, it is all set. But to your point about rats and roaches, yes, there are many rats and many roaches here. We have a few resident in my humble abode. but the one story that kind of sticks out in my mind about the rats is we were having dinner at this place called Warung Jawa. Warung is kind of restaurant in Indonesian. This is a very popular place. It's very cheap food, but all locals go there, tourists go there. It's a very kind of mixed atmosphere. And I'm sitting there, one of my first kind of couple weeks here, and there's some flies on the food, which is okay. It is what it is. And then I see a rat running across the rafters. and I kind of look up and I go, there it is. And I had seen a couple rats outside, and there's a sewer outside, like an open kind of gutter thing outside. So saw them there. And I kind of just looked at it and said, you know what? Okay, I guess I'm going to have to just roll with the punches on this one and forget that I saw the rat running across the rafters. I've been back there. Never had a big problem with the food from there, but So rats and roaches. Yes, they very much exist. And the cats that are running around don't do a damn thing about the rats either. That's what confuses me. Is there's tons of stray cats, and I haven't seen one dead rat in the mouth of any of them.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I think it's all about the balance of power. Shifting balance of power is the only way you can kind of look at it there.
The rats rule the roost. Yeah.
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 Speaking of meat and sort of rats and stuff. I know nothing about Indonesia. What is the kind of the meat that is available? The meat that is available there.
So,
is there anything? I mean, I can imagine. Obviously, there's a lot of chicken and stuff. But is there anything kind of off-piste, so to speak, at all?
Not really. Not really off-piste. I really like that term. No, it's just a lot of chicken, a lot of fish, as you'd expect from a archipelago. Beef, a lot of beef. Not a lot of pork because the Muslim majority in Bali there's some decent pork. Duck is widely available. Shrimp are around. The one thing that might push those bounds is they normally serve the fish whole, so like with the eye and the head and all that jazz. That can be a little disturbing. I'm trying to think what else. They eat a lot of liver as well, a lot of like gelatin kind of stuff, gelatin fat stuff. But nothing. This is another one kind of pushes the bounds. There's one of the big dishes is called soto ayam, which is chicken soup, and it comes in all different kinds and flavors, and everybody has their own recipe. The Warung that's right outside my house here, the woman serves it with chicken feet in it. So you'll have just like these things that look like this kind of sitting in your bowl of soup. And it's not the most pleasant thing, but the meat on the wrists is nice.
So you're supposed to eat the whole thing or not?
No, I don't think you are. I don't know. I don't really know. I didn't really ask. I think some people kind of like suck on the fingers and get in there, but I don't.
Yeah,
just really go for the gold. But I don't do that. I just kind of scrape the meat off the wrists. Yeah.
Okay. Well, fair enough. Yeah. No, I remember in Japan, I had a sort of a dish of this, and I sat chewing it for like the best part of 15 minutes to try and see if it kind of went down at all, which it didn't. The waiters found it very funny though. So I can only imagine you're not supposed to eat the like actual feet themselves, but it certainly adds a je ne sais quoi to the dish anyway. But that's cool.
Yeah.
Last question. I just wanted to have a look. It's quite popular in Holland, isn't it? Indonesian food.
Yeah, and that's
correct.
So that's the thing, and I'm glad you brought that up. Holland is the only place in the world that actually has Indonesian food, and it flabbergasted me. It's astounding because Indonesian food is delicious, and there's tons of different kinds. There's actually a video on some viral website that had put Indonesian food down in front of random people and who had never had it before, and they all loved it. It's really delicious. It's really nice. There's tons of variety. Two of the top dishes, a dish called rendang, which is kind of this really stewed, kind of chewy beef, almost like, it's not quite on like jerky standards, but it's like really chewy. It's supposed to be really chewy, and it comes in a thick, like meaty sauce. Like meaty kind of, I don't know how to describe it. Like a thick, like meat sauce.
Not jus.
Like thick. Like it's like grainy and got like bits of like almost mince in it. And it's kind of rich and I think there's coconut in it. So it's like really, it's kind of
sort of talking like a kind of curry sauce sort of thing.
Almost like a curry. It's really unique. It's frankly a really unique dish. That and nasi goreng, which is fried rice, the Indonesian fried rice, were voted two of the top dishes in the world by some poll. I might have been just Indonesians voting or just the Dutch voting, but yes. But if anybody's in the market for opening up a restaurant, I would say open up an Indonesian restaurant in London or New York or something. And if you do it right, you can make a lot of money.
Well, it takes like, if you just have about three or four hipsters, you can achieve almost anything in this world. If you have like three or four hipsters, like I've been following the kind of rise of Asian food, like obviously in the sort of 70s and stuff, it was very popular to eat Indian food, and it's kind of been moving east since then. I think now we're kind of on, like, it was Vietnamese before, and now we're on Korean. So it's going the wrong way for you at the moment.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I mean, eventually they're going to run out of countries that are like, that are cool and like really edgy and weird. I mean, I can't imagine like East Timor or Bhutan are gonna, you know, supersede you in the food. So it's really like, it's really just a matter of waiting for you, and you'll be fine. As I say, it's four hipsters, maybe three or four in Williamsburg or in Shoreditch anywhere of these sort of places. I mean, I'm sure every city has their place, but three or four of them decide. Let's do it, and then bang, you've got a movement on your hands.
We could be those hipsters, Louis. We could be those hipsters.
Yeah, it's possible.
We could get out there. We just need two more.
I need better, like a different haircut, and wear better clothes, and get some more cooler glasses, and we're there. Absolutely.
All right.
We'll touch on it the next time.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on. Let's talk onto our expat experience of the week.
All right.
Rowan, you've had a fair odyssey. Is this correct?
This is correct. So, Bali United, which is the local team, I've written about them, but have yet to. The story isn't published yet, I don't believe. No, it's not published yet. It'll be published later this winter, hopefully. We're still in the editing process. Anyway, the local team here, there's been no season until a couple weeks ago when the President's Cup started. So I went to the opening match of that. I might have mentioned it on the podcast. I don't remember. The President was not 20 meters to my left, of Indonesia, that is. and Bali United won their group. They won the first game 3-0, second drew 2-2, and then the third they won 2-1. So they were through into the knockout rounds. They played a team from Malang, which is a lovely city in East Java. And my friend and I, who's lived here much longer than myself, decided to join with their fan base, the Semiton Dewata, to Malang, which is roughly a 12-hour give or take ride away from central or from the Denpasar. So. Left Friday evening, got in Saturday morning around 7:30. Did not sleep very much on the bus because the seats were not crafted for a man of my size and length. So I was sitting sideways, not really comfortable. My friend had the same problem. Not made for white people, I guess is the best way to put it. And on top of that, as I mentioned in the run up, Bali United lost 2-1. Fortunately, it's home and away, so this was the away leg. They got the away goal, so they're still very much in it. All they need is a 1-0 victory, and they're through. Or 2-1 and the penalty, and or 3-1 or whatever. So we'll be at that game on Sunday afternoon. I'll make sure to Sunday evening. I'll make sure to keep everyone updated. And then, okay. Of course, there was the 14-hour or so bus ride back. So somewhere between 25 and 26 hours on a bus between Friday evening and Sunday afternoon. It was rough. I rapidly fell asleep upon returning home. The only thing I got from it was a nice new Bali United scarf. If you're not looking at it on if you're on listening to the podcast, it's lovely. I'll put a picture of it up in at some time or another. That's actually what I wanted to write about this weekend on Sembawang Stories, but obviously the death of a companion. Four-footed companion supersedes any football matches. That was my experience this weekend. I owe Bali United next weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, like, I mean, good luck to them. As I say, we are like probably the number one source for Western information on Bali United. Uh-huh. You can tune in here anytime you want. I wish the Bali, the boys at Bali United, the best of luck on Sunday. Do they have a nickname, Bali United?
They're the Serdadu Tridatu. Hold on. Yeah, Serdadu Tridatu. Something Warriors. I'm not really sure. I haven't. Okay. Delve too much into that, but their kind of war cry, I guess you could say, is Salamat Puputan, and Puputan is the ritual kind of bonsai thing that bonsai charge, self suicide. I guess also suicide is self suicide, but suicide that royal families did to themselves. Upon the final Dutch invasion. Salamat Puputan is kind of like bonsai, like a happy bonsai kind of thing. So,
They kind of get it up you in Scottish.
Yeah.
Right, go ahead.
What about yourself, Fantastic. Luke? What's your expat experience of the week?
Well, I only got back a couple of days ago. I'm back to southern Spain. And I have a few expat experiences from my travels, but I think we could probably touch on them in another episode, actually. In the grand scheme of things, this week of strange things that don't usually happen to, well, no, don't usually, just never fucking happen to me in Scotland. I was woken up yesterday by what I would describe as a different sort of apocalyptic sound to the normal, which is the guys taking our bins out. Yeah. But according to tradition, at the midpoint of September, it's time to shave the palm trees of the town. which involves this this bloke who was actually quite drunk when he did it, in a sort of cherry picker kind of thing, like a kind of homemade truck cherry picker, went up, and there's my square outside my house is festooned with palm trees. So he was carving these off, and it was really early in the morning, about 7:30. I woke up and came out of my front door, and he was there, just like hacking away at this palm tree. And I asked him what he was doing, and why he was doing it so early, and he didn't do anything. He didn't obviously pay me any heed. But later on, I came out, and the floor of the square was completely awash with dates, like fresh dates. And I picked one up, and the bloke who'd been carving earlier, he asked if I wanted any dates. And I said, well, I mean, yeah, it's not something that usually people ask me in the street, like if you just want some free palm fruit. But yeah, exactly. Anyway, he did. To his credit, he reached into this like giant skip and gave me like a part of the palm tree that he'd hacked off earlier with like a good 100 or 200 dates on it, like good to eat, apart from about 25% of them have been like coated in bird shit. I think that those are probably a bit of a write-off, I think. But I think the thought was very nice. I put it in my house for a couple of days until it like proved there was like quite a lot of insects living in it, and then I have put it on my balcony since then. But in terms of things that don't usually happen in Scotland, the kind of shaving of palm trees, or palm trees at all, and the giving of free dates, certainly was a new one for me. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, if you're in the southern Spain area listening and you want, like, fucking loads of dates, head on down, and I'll hook you up with this guy.
Dates are delicious. I really, really, I'm a big fan.
Yeah.
Big fan of dates. Big fan of dates.
Me too.
But it also...
They are a wonderful thing.
It also seems like old men or drunk men just keep giving you fruit.
Hmm. Yeah,
you got the lemons. You got the dates.
I got lemons. Yeah, it's true. Yeah, and one guy gave me a bowl of onion soup as well. So I should probably read into what the cultural significance of this means. If I get burned in a wicker man at some point in the future, then you saw it coming from a mile off on the podcast.
Yeah.
This is Queen's evidence. So keep it up.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, fantastic. Thank you very much. Anyway, I think we'll probably wrap it up there.
I think that's a good idea. Yeah, that's a good idea.
Wrap it up there. As I say, thank you very much for listening, all of those who listened. You can get in touch with me on my magazine, which has been remodeled. So have a go and check it out at www.talkingsoup.com. Also, if you are listening on iTunes, please take 2 minutes and write a review of the podcast on iTunes. It helps us keep the podcast going. And if you enjoy it, you can write a review. But try and make it a positive one, not a really negative one. That would be ideal.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you. Rowan, how can people get in touch with you?
On my blog, Semawang Stories, semawangstories.wordpress.com. Or on the Frying Pan website, thefryingpan.wordpress.com. You can also tweet at me at RLMKANE. Yeah, I think that's it. Good talking to you, Lou. Certainly perked me up from what's been a rough week.
I hear you, man. Yeah. I hear you, man. Yeah. And for more information on that, check out his blog.
Cheers.
Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, thanks again for listening. We'll see you. Well, not see you. We'll see some of you. And we'll you'll hear us next week. Take care. Rowan, see you later.
Bye, Lou. Silence.
Let the birds sing a heavenly song in church.